Chapter 11. We visit the garden gnome emporium. In a way, it's nice to know there are Greek gods out there, because you have somebody to blame when things go wrong. For instance, when you're walking away from a bus that's just been attacked by monster hags and blown up by lightning, and it's raining on top of everything else, most people might think that's just really bad luck. When you're a half-blood, you understand that some divine force is really trying to mess up your day. So there we were, Annabeth and Grover and I, walking through the woods along the New Jersey riverbank, the glow of New York City making the night sky yellow behind us, and the smell of the Hudson River reeking in our noses. Grover was shivering and braying, his big goat eyes turned split-pupiled and full of terror.
"Three kindly ones, all at once!"
I was pretty much in shock myself. The explosion of bus windows still rang in my ears. But Annabeth kept pulling us along, saying, "Come on, the further away we get, the better." "All our money was back there," I reminded her. "Our food and clothes, everything."
"Well, maybe if you hadn't decided to jump into the fight."
"What did you want me to do? Let you get killed?"
"You didn't need to protect me, Percy. I would have been fine."
"Sliced like sandwich bread," Grover put in, "but fine."
"Shut up, goat boy," said Annabeth.
Grover brayed mournfully.
"Tin cans, a perfectly good bag of tin cans."
We sloshed across the mushy ground through nasty, twisted trees that smelled like sour laundry. After a few minutes, Annabeth fell into line next to me.
"Look, I..." Her voice faltered. "I appreciate you coming back for us, okay? That was really brave."
"We're a team, right?" She was silent for a few more steps.
"It's just that if you died, aside from the fact that it would really suck for you, it would mean the quest was over. This may be my only chance to see the real world."
The thunderstorm had finally let up. The city glow faded behind us, leaving us in almost total darkness. I couldn't see anything of Annabeth, except a glint of her blonde hair.
"You haven't left Camp Half-Blood since you were 7, I asked her. "No, only short field trips. My dad..."
"The history professor?"
"Yeah, it didn't work out for me living at home. I mean, Camp Half-Blood is my home."
She was rushing her words now, as if she were afraid somebody might try to stop her.
"At camp, you train, and that's all cool and everything, but the real world is where the monsters are. That's where you learn whether you're any good or not."
If I didn't know better, I could have sworn I heard doubt in her voice.
"You're pretty good with that knife," I said. "You think so?"
"Anybody who can piggyback ride a fury is okay by me." I couldn't really see, but I thought she might have smiled.
"You know," she said, "maybe I should tell you. Something funny back on the bus."
Whatever she wanted to say was interrupted by a shrill toot, 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 like the sound of an owl being tortured.
"Hey, my reed pipe still works," Grover cried. "If I could just remember a Find Path song, we could get out of these woods."
He puffed out a few notes, but the tune still sounded suspiciously like Hilary Duff. Instead of finding a path, I immediately slammed into a tree and got a nice-sized knot on my head. Add to the list of superpowers I did not have, infrared vision. After tripping and cursing and generally feeling miserable for another mile or so, I started to see a light up ahead, the colors of a neon sign. I could smell food. Fried, greasy, excellent food. I realized I hadn't eaten anything unhealthy since I'd arrived at Half-Blood Hill, where we lived on grapes, bread, cheese, and extra lean-cut, nymph-prepared barbecue. This boy needed a double cheeseburger. We kept walking until I saw a deserted two-lane road through the trees. On the other side was a closed-down gas station, a tattered billboard for a 1990s movie, and one open business, which was the source of the neon light and the good smell. It wasn't a fast food restaurant like I'd hoped. It was one of those weird roadside curio shops that sell lawn flamingos and wooden Indians and cement grizzly bears and stuff like that. The main building was a long, low warehouse surrounded by acres of statuary. The neon sign above the gate was impossible for me to read, because if there's anything worse for my dyslexia than regular English, it's red cursive neon English. To me, it looked like Atniu mes gredinran gomen mepruium. What the heck does that say? I asked.
I don't know, Annabeth said.
She loved reading so much I'd forgotten she was dyslexic too. Grover translated.
Auntie M's Garden Gnome Emporium.
Flanking the entrance, as advertised, were two cement garden gnomes, ugly, bearded little runts, smiling and waving as if they were about to get their picture taken. I crossed the street, following the smell of the hamburgers.
Hey!
Grover warned.
The lights are on inside, Annabeth said. Maybe it's open.
Snack bar,
I wistfully said.
Snack bar,
she agreed.
Are you too crazy? Grover said. This place is weird.
We ignored him. The front lot was a forest of statues, cement animals, cement children, even a cement satyr playing pipes, which gave Grover the creeps. He bleated.
Looks like my Uncle Ferdinand.
We stopped at the warehouse door.
Don't knock,
Grover pleaded.
I smell monsters.
Your nose is clogged up from the Furies, Annabeth told him. All I smell is burgers. Aren't you hungry?
Meat, he said scornfully. I'm a vegetarian.
You eat cheese enchiladas and aluminum cans, I reminded him.
Those are vegetables. Come on, let's leave. These statues are looking at me.
Then the door creaked open, and standing in front of us was a tall Middle Eastern woman. At least I assumed she was Middle Eastern, because she wore a long black gown that covered everything but her hands, and her head was completely veiled. Her eyes glinted behind a curtain of black gauze, but that was about all I could make out. Her coffee-colored hands looked old, but well-manicured and elegant, so I imagined she was a grandmother who had once been a beautiful lady. Her accent sounded vaguely Middle Eastern, too. She said,
Children, it is too late to be out all alone. Where are your parents?
They're,
Annabeth started to say.
We're orphans, I said.
Orphans? But my dears, surely not.
We got separated from our caravan, I said. Our circus caravan. The ringmaster told us to meet him at the gas station if we got lost. But he may have forgotten, or maybe he meant a different gas station. Anyway, we're lost. Is that food I smell?
Oh, my dears, the woman said. You must come in, poor children. I'm Auntie M. Go straight to the back of the warehouse, please. There is a dining area.
We thanked her and went inside. Annabeth muttered to me,
Circus caravan?
Always have a strategy, right?
Your head is full of kelp.
The warehouse was filled with more statues, people in all different poses, wearing all different outfits and with different expressions on their faces. I was thinking, you'd have to have a pretty huge garden to fit even one of these statues, because they were all life-size. But mostly, I was thinking about food. Go ahead. Call me an idiot for walking into a strange lady's shop like that just because I was hungry. But I do impulsive stuff sometimes. Plus, you've never smelled Auntie M's burgers. The aroma was like laughing gas in the dentist's chair. It made everything else go away. I barely noticed Grover's nervous whimpers, or the way the statue's eyes seemed to follow me, or
the fact that Auntie M had locked the door behind us. All I cared about was finding the dining area, and sure enough, there it was at the back of the warehouse, a fast food counter with a grill, a soda fountain, a pretzel heater, and a nacho cheese dispenser. Everything you could want, plus a few steel picnic tables out front.
"Please, sit down,"
Auntie M said. "Awesome," I said. Grover said reluctantly,
"We don't have any money, ma'am."
Before I could jab him in the ribs, Auntie M said,
"No, no, children, no money. This is a special case, yes. This is my treat for such nice orphans."
"Thank you, ma'am," Annabeth said. Auntie M stiffened, as if Annabeth had done something wrong. But then the old woman relaxed just as quickly, so I figured it must have been my imagination.
"Quite all right, Annabeth," she said. "You have such beautiful gray eyes, child."
Only later did I wonder how she knew Annabeth's name, even though we had never introduced ourselves. Our hostess disappeared behind the snack counter and started cooking. Before I knew it, she'd brought us plastic trays heaped with double cheeseburgers, vanilla shakes, and double XL servings of French fries. I was halfway through my burger before I remembered to breathe. Annabeth slurped her shake. Grover picked at the fries and eyed the tray's waxed paper liner as if he might go for that too, but he still looked too nervous to eat.
"What's that hissing noise?"
he asked. I listened, but I didn't hear anything. Annabeth shook her head.
"Hissing," Auntie M asked. "Perhaps you hear the deep fryer oil. You have keen ears, Grover."
"I take vitamins for my ears."
"That's admirable. But please, relax."
Auntie M ate nothing. She hadn't taken off her headdress even to cook, and now she sat forward and interlaced her fingers and watched us eat. It was a little unsettling, having someone stare at me when I couldn't see her face, but I was feeling satisfied after the burger, and a little sleepy, and I figured the least I could do was to try to make small talk with our hostess. "So, you sell gnomes," I said, trying to sound interested.
"Oh, yes," Auntie M said, "and animals, and people. Anything for the garden. Custom orders. Statuary is very popular, you know."
"A lot of business on this road?"
"Not so much, no. Since the highway was built, most cars, they do not go this way now. I must cherish every customer I get."
My neck tingled as if somebody else was looking at me. I turned, but it was just a statue of a young girl holding on to an Easter basket. The detail was incredible, much better than you see in most garden statues. But something was wrong with her face. It looked as if she were startled or even terrified.
"Ah," Auntie M said sadly, "you noticed some of my creations do not turn out well. They are marred. They do not sell. The face is the hardest to get right. Always the face."
"You make those statues yourself?" I asked.
"Oh, yes. Once upon a time, I had two sisters to help me in the business. But they have passed on, and Auntie M is alone. I have only my statues. That is why I make them, you see. They are my company."
The sadness in her voice sounded so deep and so real that I couldn't help feeling sorry for her. Annabeth had stopped eating. She sat forward and said, "Two sisters?"
"It's a terrible story," Auntie M said. "Not one for children, really. You see, Annabeth, a bad woman was jealous of me long ago when I was young. I had a boyfriend, you know, and this bad woman was determined to break us apart. She caused a terrible accident. My sister stayed with me. They shared my bad fortune as long as they could, but eventually they passed on. They faded away. I alone have survived, but at a price, such a price.
I wasn't sure what she meant, but I felt bad for her. My eyelids kept getting heavier, my full stomach making me sleepy. Poor old lady, who would want to hurt someone so nice?
Percy!
Annabeth was shaking me to get my attention.
Maybe we should go. I mean, the ringmaster will be waiting.
She sounded tense. I wasn't sure why. Grover was eating the waxed paper off the tray by now, and if Auntie M found that strange, she didn't say anything.
Such beautiful gray eyes, Auntie M told Annabeth again.
Why, yes, it has been a long time since I've seen such gray eyes like those.
She reached out as if to stroke Annabeth's cheek, but Annabeth stood up abruptly.
We really should go.
Yes,
Grover swallowed his waxed paper and stood up.
The ringmaster is waiting, right?
I didn't want to leave. I felt full and content. Auntie M was so nice. I wanted to stay with her a while.
Please, dis, Auntie M pleaded. I so rarely get to be with children. Before you go, won't you at least sit down for a pose?
A pose? Annabeth asked warily.
A photograph. I will use it to model my new statue set. Children are so popular, you see. Everyone loves children.
Annabeth shifted her weight from foot to foot.
I don't think we can, ma'am. Come on, Percy.
Sure we can, I said. I was irritated with Annabeth for being so bossy, so rude to an old lady who just fed us for free. It's just a photo, Annabeth. What's the harm?
Yes, Annabeth, the woman purred. No harm.
I could tell Annabeth didn't like it, but she allowed Auntie M to lead us back out the front door, into the Garden of Statues. Auntie M directed us to a park bench next to the stone satyr.
Now, she said, I'll just position you correctly. The young girl in the middle, I think, and the two young gentlemen on either side.
Not much light for a photo, I remarked.
Oh, enough, Auntie M said. Enough for us to see each other, yes?
Auntie M stepped back as if to admire the shot.
Now, the face is the most difficult. Can you smile for me, please, everyone? A large smile.
Grover glanced at the cement satyr next to him and mumbled,
That sure does look like Uncle Ferdinand.
Grover,
Auntie M chastised.
Look this way, dear.
She still had no camera in her hands.
Percy,
Annabeth said. Some instinct warned me to listen to Annabeth, but I was fighting that sleepy feeling, the comfortable lull that comes from food and the old lady's voice.
I will be just a moment,
Auntie M said.
You know, I can't see very well in this cursed veil.
Percy, something's wrong,
Annabeth insisted.
Wrong,
Auntie M said, reaching up to undo the wrap around her head.
Not at all, my dear. I have such noble company tonight. What could be wrong?
That is Uncle Ferdinand,
Grover gasped.
Look away from her,
Annabeth shouted. She whipped her Yankees cap onto her head and vanished. Her invisible hands pushed Grover and me off the bench. I was on the ground, looking at Aunt Em's sandaled feet. I could hear Grover scrambling off in one direction, Annabeth in the other, but I was too dazed to move. Then I heard a strange rasping sound above me. My eyes rose to Auntie Em's hands, which had turned gnarled and warty, with sharp bronze talons for fingernails. I almost looked higher, but somewhere off to my left, Annabeth screamed,
No, don't!
More rasping.
the sound of tiny snakes right above me from where Auntie M's head would be.
Run!
Grover bleated. I heard him racing across the gravel, calling,
Maya!
To kickstart his flying sneakers. I couldn't move. I stared at Auntie M's gnarled claws and tried to fight the groggy trance the old woman had put in me.
Such a pity to destroy a handsome young face, she told me soothingly. Stay with me, Percy. All you have to do is look up.
I fought the urge to obey. Instead, I looked to one side and saw one of those glass spheres people put in gardens, a gazing ball. I could see Auntie M's dark reflection in the orange glass. Her headdress was gone, revealing her face as a shimmering pale circle. Her hair was moving, writhing, like serpents. Auntie M. Auntie M! How could I have been so stupid? Think, I told myself, how did Medusa die in the myth? But I couldn't think. Something told me that in the myth, Medusa had been asleep when she was attacked by my namesake, Perseus. She wasn't anywhere near asleep now. If she wanted, she could take those talons right now and rake open my face.
The great-eyed one did this to me, Percy, Medusa said,
and she didn't sound anything like a monster. Her voice invited me to look up, to sympathize with the poor old grandmother.
Annabeth's mother, the cursed Athena, turned me from a beautiful woman into this.
Don't listen to her!
Annabeth's voice shouted somewhere in the statuary.
Run, Percy!
Silence!
Medusa snarled. Then her voice modulated back to a comforting purr.
You see why I must destroy the girl, Percy. She is my enemy's daughter. I shall crush her statue to dust. But you, dear Percy, you need not suffer.
No, I muttered. I tried to make my legs move.
Do you really want to help the gods? Medusa asked. Do you understand what awaits you on this foolish quest, Percy? What will happen if you reach the underworld? Do not be a pawn of the Olympians, my dear. You would be better off as a statue. Less pain. Less pain.
Percy!
Behind me, I heard a buzzing sound, like a 200-pound hummingbird in a nosedive. Grover yelled,
Duck!
I turned, and there he was in the night sky, flying in from 12 o'clock with his winged shoes fluttering. Grover holding a tree branch the size of a baseball bat. His eyes were shut tight. His head twitched from side to side. He was navigating by ears and nose alone.
Duck!
He yelled again.
I'll get her!
That finally jolted me into action. Knowing Grover, I was sure he'd miss Medusa and nail me. I dove to one side.
Thwack!
At first, I figured it was the sound of Grover hitting a tree. Then Medusa roared with rage.
You miserable satyr!
She snarled.
I'll add you to my collection.
That was for Uncle Ferdinand,
Grover yelled back. I scrambled away and hid in the statuary while Grover swooped down for another pass.
Kerwhack!
Ugh! Medusa yelled, her snake hair hissing and spitting. Right next to me, Annabeth's voice said,
Percy!
I jumped so high my feet nearly cleared a garden gnome.
Jeez, don't do that!
Annabeth took off her Yankees cap and became visible.
You have to cut her head off!
What? Are you crazy? Let's get out of here!
Medusa is a menace! She's evil! I'd kill her myself, but...
Annabeth swallowed, as if she were about to make a difficult admission.
But you've got the better weapon. Besides, I'd never get close to her. She'd slice me to bits because of my mother. You've got a chance.
What? I can't.
Look, do you want her turning more innocent people into statues?
She pointed to a pair of statue lovers, a man and a woman with their arms around each other, turned to stone by the monster. Annabeth grabbed a green gazing ball from a nearby pedestal. A polished shield would be better. She studied the sphere critically. The convexity will cause some distortion. The reflection size should be off by a factor of...
Would you speak English?
I am.
She tossed me the glass ball.
Just look at her in the glass. Never look at her directly.
Hey, guys, Grover yelled somewhere above us. I think she's unconscious. Maybe not,
Grover corrected. He went in for another pass with the tree branch.
Hurry, Annabeth told me. Grover's got a great nose, but he'll eventually crash.
I took out my pen and uncapped it. The bronze blade of Riptide elongated in my hand. I followed the hissing and sputtering sound of Medusa's hair. I kept my eyes locked on the gazing ball so I would only glimpse Medusa's reflection, not the real thing. Then, in the green-tinted glass, I saw her. Grover was coming in for another turn at bat, but this time he flew a little too low. Medusa grabbed the stick and pulled him off course. He tumbled through the air and crashed into the arms of a stone grizzly bear with a painful... Ugh. Medusa was about to lunge at him when I yelled, Hey! I advanced on her, which wasn't easy, holding a sword and a glass ball. If she charged, I'd have a hard time defending myself. But she let me approach 20 feet, 10 feet. I could see the reflection of her face now. Surely it wasn't really that ugly. The green swirls of the gazing ball must be distorting it, making it look worse.
You wouldn't harm an old woman, Percy, she crooned. I know you wouldn't.
I hesitated, fascinated by the face I saw reflected in the glass, the eyes that seemed to burn straight through the green tint, making my arms go weak. From the cement grizzly, Grover mourned,
Percy, don't listen to her.
Medusa cackled.
Too late.
She lunged at me with her talons. I slashed up with my sword, heard a sickening schlock, then a hiss like wind rushing out of a cavern, the sound of a monster disintegrating. Something fell to the ground next to my foot. It took all my willpower not to look. I could feel warm oozing soaking into my socks. Little dying snakeheads tugging at my shoelaces.
Oh, yuck, Grover said.
His eyes were still tightly closed, but I guess he could hear the thing gurgling and streaming.
Mega yuck.
Annabeth came up next to me, her eyes fixed on the sky. She was holding Medusa's black veil. She said,
Don't move.
Very, very carefully, without looking down, she knelt and draped the monster's head in black cloth, then picked it up. It was still dripping green juice.
Are you okay?
She asked me, her voice trembling. Yeah, I decided, though I felt like throwing up my double cheeseburger. Why didn't the head evaporate?
Once you sever it, it will become a spoil of war, she said. Same as your minotaur horn.
But don't unwrap the head. It can still petrify you. Grover moaned as he climbed down from the grizzly statue. He had a big welt on his forehead. His green Rasta cap hung down from one of his little goat horns, and his fake feet had been knocked off his hooves. His magic sneakers were flying aimlessly around his head.
The Red Baron, I said. Good job, man. He managed a bashful grin.
That really was not fun, though. Well, the hitting her with the stick part, that was fun. But crashing into a concrete bear, not fun.
He snatched the shoes out of the air. I recapped my sword. Together, the three of us stumbled back to the warehouse. We found some old plastic grocery bags behind the snack counter and double-wrapped Medusa's head. We plopped it on the table where we'd eaten the dinner and sat around it, too exhausted to speak. Finally, I said, "So, we have Athena to thank for this monster." Annabeth flashed me an irritated look. "Your dad, actually. Don't you remember? Medusa was Poseidon's girlfriend. They decided to meet in my mother's temple. That's why Athena turned her into a monster. Medusa and her two sisters, who had helped her get into the temple, they became the three Gorgons. That's why Medusa wanted to slice me up. But she wanted to preserve you as a nice statue. She's still sweet on your dad. You probably remind her of him." My face was burning. "Oh, so now it's my fault we met Medusa." Annabeth straightened. In a bad imitation of my voice, she said, "It's just a photo, Annabeth. What's the harm?" "Forget it," I said. "You're impossible."
"You're insufferable."
"You're..."
"Hey," Grover interrupted. "You two are giving me a migraine, and satyrs don't even get migraines. What are we going to do with the head?"
I stared at the thing. One little snake was hanging out of a hole in the plastic. The words printed on the side of the bag said, "We appreciate your business." I was angry, not just with Annabeth or her mom, but with all the gods for this whole quest, for getting us blown off the road and in two major fights the very first day out from camp. At this rate, we'd never make it to L.A. alive, much less before the summer solstice. What had Medusa said? "Do not be a pawn of the Olympians, my dear. You would be better off as a statue." I got up. "I'll be back."
"Percy," Annabeth called after me, "what are you..."
I searched the back of the warehouse until I found Medusa's office. Her account book showed her six most recent sales, all shipments to the underworld, to decorate Hades and Persephone's garden. According to one freight bill, the underworld's billing address was DOA Recording Studios, West Hollywood, California. I folded up the bill and stuffed it in my pocket. In the cash register, I found $20, a few golden drachmas, and some packing slips for Hermes Overnight Express, each with a little leather bag attached for coins. I rummaged around the rest of the office until I found the right size box. I went back to the picnic table, packed up Medusa's head, and filled out a delivery slip. "The gods, Mount Olympus, 600th floor, Empire State Building, New York, New York. With best wishes, Percy Jackson."
"They're not going to like that," Grover warned. "They'll think you're impertinent."
I poured some gold drachmas into the pouch. As soon as I closed it, there was a sound like a cash register. The package floated off the table and disappeared with a pop. "I am impertinent," I said. I looked at Annabeth, daring her to criticize. She didn't. She seemed resigned to the fact that I had a major talent for ticking off the gods. "Come on," she muttered. "We need a new plan." Chapter 12. We get advice from a poodle. We were pretty miserable that night. We camped out in the woods, 100 yards from the main road, in a marshy clearing that the local kids had obviously been using for parties. The ground was littered with flattened soda cans and food wrappers. We'd taken some food and blankets from Auntie M's, but we didn't dare light a fire to dry our damp clothes. The Furies and Medusa had provided enough excitement for one day. We didn't want to attract anything else. We decided to sleep in shifts. I volunteered to take first watch. Annabeth curled up on the blankets and was snoring as soon as her head hit the ground. Grover fluttered with his flying shoes to the lowest bough of a tree, put his back to the trunk, and stared at the night sky. "Go ahead and sleep," I told him. "I'll wake you if there's trouble." He nodded, but he still didn't close his eyes.
"It makes me sad, Percy."
"What does? The fact that you signed up for this stupid quest?"
"No, this makes me sad."
He pointed at all the garbage on the ground.
And the sky. You can't even see the stars. They've polluted the sky. This is a terrible time to be a satyr.
Oh, yeah, I guess you'd be an environmentalist.
He glared at me. Only a human wouldn't be. Your species is clogging up the world so fast. Never mind. It's useless to lecture a human. At the rate things are going, I'll never find Pan.
Pam? Like the cooking spray?
Pan! He cried indignantly. P-A-N! The great god Pan! Why do you think I want a searcher's license for?
A strange breeze rustled through the clearing, temporarily overpowering the stink of trash and muck. It brought the smell of berries and wildflowers and clean rainwater, things that might have once been in these woods. Suddenly, I was nostalgic for something I'd never known.
Tell me about the search, I said.
Grover looked at me cautiously as if he were afraid I was just making fun.
The god of wild places disappeared 2,000 years ago,
he told me.
A sailor off the coast of Ephesus heard a mysterious voice crying out from the shore. Tell them that the great god Pan has died. When humans heard the news, they believed it. They'd been pillaging Pan's kingdom ever since. But for the satyrs, Pan was our lord and master. He protected us and the wild places of the earth. We refused to believe that he died. In every generation, the bravest satyrs pledged their lives to finding Pan. They searched the earth, exploring all the wildest places, hoping to find where he is hiding and wake him from a sleep.
And you want to be a searcher?
It's my life's dream, he said. My father was a searcher. And my Uncle Ferdinand, the statue you saw back there.
Oh, right. Sorry. Grover shook his head.
Uncle Ferdinand knew the risks. So did my dad. But I'll succeed. I'll be the first searcher to return alive.
Hang on. The first? Grover took his reed pipes out of his pocket.
No searcher has ever come back. Once they set out, they disappear. They're never seen alive again.
Not once in 2,000 years?
No.
And your dad? You have no idea what happened to him?
None.
But you still want to go? I said, amazed. I mean, you really think you'll be the one to find Pan?
I have to believe that, Percy. Every searcher does. It's the only thing that keeps us from despair when we look at what humans have done to the world. I have to believe Pan can still be awakened.
I stared at the orange haze of the sky and tried to understand how Grover could pursue a dream that seemed so hopeless. Then again, was I any better?
How are you going to get into the underworld? I asked him. I mean, what chance do we have against a god?
I don't know, he admitted. But back at Medusa's, when you were searching her office, Annabeth was telling me...
Oh, I forgot. Annabeth will have a plan all figured out.
Don't be so hard on her, Percy. She's had a tough life, but she's a good person. After all, she forgave me.
His voice faltered.
What do you mean? I asked. Forgave you for what?
Suddenly, Grover seemed very interested in playing notes on his pipes. Wait a minute, I said. Your first keeper job was 5 years ago. Annabeth has been at camp 5 years. She wasn't... I mean, your first assignment that went wrong?
I can't talk about it,
Grover said, his quivering lower lip suggesting he'd start crying if I pressed him.
But as I was saying, back at Medusa's, Annabeth and I agreed there's something strange going on with this quest. Something that isn't what it seems.
Well, duh. I'm getting blamed for stealing a thunderbolt that Hades took.
That's not what I mean, Grover said. The kindly ones were sort of holding back. Like Mrs. Dodds at Yancey Academy. Why did she wait so long to try to kill you? And then on the bus? They just weren't as aggressive as they could have been.
They seemed pretty aggressive to me. Grover shook his head.
They were screeching at us. Where is it? Where?
Asking about me, I said.
Maybe. But Annabeth and I, we both got the feeling they weren't asking about a person. They said, where is it? They seemed to be asking about an object.
That doesn't make sense.
I know. But if we've misunderstood something about this quest, we only have 9 days to find the Master Bolt.
He looked at me like he was hoping for answers, but I didn't have any. I thought about what Medusa had said. I was being used by the gods. What lay ahead of me was worse than petrification. I haven't been straight with you, I told Grover. I don't care about the Master Bolt. I agreed to go to the underworld so I could bring my mother back. Grover blew a soft note on his pipes.
I know that, Percy. But are you sure that's the only reason?
I'm not doing this to help my father. He doesn't care about me. I don't care about him. Grover gazed down from his tree branch.
Look, Percy, I'm not as smart as Annabeth. I'm not as brave as you. But I'm pretty good at reading emotions. You're glad your father is alive. You feel good that he's claimed you, and part of you wants to make him proud. That's why you mailed Medusa's head to Olympus. You wanted him to notice what you'd done.
Yeah, well, maybe sadder emotions work differently than human emotions, because you're wrong. I don't care what he thinks. Grover pulled his feet up onto the branch.
Okay, Percy, whatever.
Besides, I haven't done anything worth bragging about. We barely got out of New York. We're stuck here with no money and no way west. Grover looked up at the night sky like he was thinking about a problem.
How about I take the first watch, huh? You get some sleep.
I wanted to protest, but he started to play Mozart, soft and sweet, and I turned away, my eyes stinging. After a few bars of Piano Concerto No. 12, I was asleep. In my dreams, I stood in a dark cavern before a gaping pit. Gray mist creatures churned all around me, whispering rags of smoke that I somehow knew were the spirits of the dead. They tugged at my clothes, trying to pull me back, but I felt compelled to walk forward to the very edge of the chasm. Looking down made me dizzy. The pit yawned so wide and was so completely black, I knew it must be bottomless. Yet I had a feeling that something was trying to rise from the abyss, something huge and evil.
The little hero!
An amused voice echoed far down in the darkness.
Too weak, too young, but perhaps you will do.
The voice felt ancient, cold, and heavy. It wrapped around me like sheets of lead.
They have misled you, boy, it said. Barter with me. I will give you what you want.
A shimmering image hovered over the void. My mother, frozen at the moment she dissolved into a shower of gold. Her face was distorted with pain, as if the Minotaur were still squeezing her neck. Her eyes looked directly at me, pleading, "Go!" I tried to cry out, but my voice wouldn't work. Cold laughter echoed from the chasm. An invisible force pulled me forward. It would drag me into the pit unless I stood firm.
"Help me rise, boy!"
The voice became hungrier.
"Bring me the bolt! Strike a blow against the treacherous gods!"
the spirits of the dead whispered around me. No, wake! The image of my mother began to fade. The thing in the pit tightened its unseen grip around me. I realized it wasn't interested in pulling me in. It was using me to pull itself out.
Good,
it murmured.
Good.
Wake, the dead whispered.
Wake!
Someone was shaking me. My eyes opened, and it was daylight.
Well, Annabeth said, the zombie lives.
I was trembling from the dream. I could still feel the grip of the chasm monster around my chest. How long was I asleep?
Long enough for me to cook breakfast.
Annabeth tossed me a bag of nacho-flavored corn chips from Auntie M's snack bar.
And Grover went exploring. Look, he found a friend.
My eyes had trouble focusing. Grover was sitting cross-legged on a blanket with something fuzzy in his lap, a dirty, unnaturally pink stuffed animal. No, it wasn't a stuffed animal. It was a pink poodle. The poodle yapped at me suspiciously. Grover said,
No, he's not.
I blinked. Are you talking to that thing? The poodle growled.
This thing, Grover warned, is our ticket west. Be nice to him.
You talk to animals? Grover ignored the question.
Percy, meet Gladiola. Gladiola? Percy.
I stared at Annabeth, figuring she'd crack up at this practical joke they were playing on me, but she looked deadly serious. I'm not saying hello to a pink poodle, I said. Forget it.
Percy, Annabeth said. I said hello to the poodle. You should say hello to the poodle.
The poodle growled. I said hello to the poodle. Grover explained that he'd come across Gladiola in the woods, and they'd struck up a conversation. The poodle had run away from a rich family who'd posted a $200 reward for his return. Gladiola didn't really want to go back to his family, but he was willing to if it meant helping Grover. How does Gladiola know about the reward? I asked.
He reads the signs, Grover said. Duh!
Of course, I said. Silly me.
So we turn in Gladiola,
Annabeth explained in her best strategy voice.
We get the money, and we buy tickets to Los Angeles. Simple.
I thought about my dream, the whispering voices of the dead, the thing in the chasm, and my mother's face, shimmering as it dissolved into gold. All that might be waiting for me in the West.
Not another bus, I said warily.
No,
Annabeth agreed. She pointed downhill, towards train tracks I hadn't been able to see last night in the dark.
There's an Amtrak station half a mile that way. According to Gladiola, the westbound train leaves at noon.